This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. And here is Joe Adamoff to answer your questions. Doug Moffat of Goderich, Ontario. Canada has the CN Tower, the tallest freestanding structure in the world. I've read that the USSR has the second tallest. Tell us about your tower.
Well, our tower was built quite a few years before the CN Tower. It is only 44 feet lower than the CN Tower in Toronto. Our tower, of course, is higher than even the Sears Tower in Chicago. But we'll have to give Canada the honor of having the tallest freestanding structure, although it's only 44 feet. You have a restaurant on top of your tower called Top of Toronto, where I had the pleasure of lunching in 78. Incidentally, I was atop of the tower before it was opened, just about a month before the Montreal Olympics. You have Top of Toronto. We have a restaurant, also a revolving restaurant, called Seventh Heaven. I think it's the only restaurant in Moscow where you pay a cover charge. But I'll be honest with you, ours, the profile, I think looks better than the CN Tower. It's more needle-like. It's more like a rapier. It's like a hollow concrete tube. But our elevators are inside, and you can't see anything when going up. Whereas on the CN Tower, you have a glass shaft, and the elevator is glass too, so you can see everything going up. I think that is an advantage. Right next to our tower in Ostankino, we have the largest television center in Europe, and the building, incidentally, is the largest building in volume in Europe.
James Zacabe of Applegate, Oregon. The song Volga Boatman seems to remind me of the greatest man that ever ruled Russia, Nicholas II. I take my hat off to him.
James, I would like to, before answering this statement, quote what the Encyclopedia Britannica says about Nicholas II. His reactionary attitude, coupled with his generally inept handling of domestic and foreign affairs, contributed much to his downfall. Neither by upbringing nor by temperament was he fitted for the complex tasks that awaited him as a ruler. He patronized an extremist right-wing organization, the Union of Russian People, which sanctioned terrorist methods and disseminated anti-Semitic propaganda. That, my friend, is the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, I have a book which is rabidly anti-Soviet called The Meaning of Communism. It was published by Simon & Schuster. And here's what that book says about Nicholas II. After World War I, it says, trains broke down, food supplies fell off to a trickle, and long lines of people formed in every Russian town, only to find no food. But the Tsar paid little attention. The country was actually being governed by the Empress Alexandra and a succession of half-mad or totally incompetent ministers. While the Tsar's whole empire crumbled around his head, he himself seemed totally unable to act. Well, James, you say he was the greatest man that ever ruled Russia, and you take your hat off to him. Well, the hat's yours. You can do what you like with it.
How many hours a day and days a week do your people work in the factories?
They work 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. Saturdays and Sundays are usually off. Although some categories of workers, like miners, have a 30-hour working week. Besides such professions as teachers, doctors, say workers in the chemical industry, and announcers on the radio, have a 36-hour working week.
Do farmers in Russia have to irrigate their farms and orchards, or do they depend on the rain?
Well, in some areas, irrigation is the main form of farming. That's mostly in Central Asia, in Kazakhstan, in the Transcaucasian republics, in the arid zones of the Volga Basin, and in the southern Ukraine. You'll find irrigation in the North Caucasus and in Moldavia, too. As a rule, large-scale irrigation work is conducted by state agencies and at state expense. Oh, what else? With every year, our irrigated lands produce more and more produce, whereas they comprise rather comparatively a small percent of the total farm area, they yield, nevertheless, nearly one-fourth of the entire output of crop farming. Their output substantially diminishes the fluctuations in the gross farm output due to weather conditions, which, as a whole, are not too favorable in the Soviet Union.
Robert Hamilton of Jasper, Georgia. Are the canals in your country used for irrigation or navigation?
Well, I've spoken about irrigation already. As for navigation, we have a lot of canals that are used for navigation. In fact, our White Sea Baltic Canal and the Volga Baltic Canal are much longer than any one of them is much longer than the Suez Canal. And if you take, for instance, the Moscow-Volga Canal and the Volga-Don Canal, they're much longer than the Panama Canal. In fact, all the seas in the European part of the Soviet Union are now interconnected by a system of rivers and canals. And from Moscow, you can sail to Leningrad on the Baltic Sea, to Archangel up in the Arctic, to Astrakhan on the Caspian Sea, to Rostov, that's on the Azov Sea, and to Odessa on the Black Sea. So you see, the system of canals is very great indeed.
Are new canals under construction?
Well, the canals that are under construction today are mostly irrigation canals. We're building powerful irrigation systems, primarily in the Volga Basin and in the southern Ukraine. Construction is going ahead at full speed. Today we have a total of something like 62 million acres that are irrigated.
Is the use of canals decreasing?
No, just the other way around. The freight turnover on our rivers, and that includes the canals, is increasing with every year, and so is the number of passengers that is carried by our river boats. I myself was surprised to learn that the number of passengers carried annually on our rivers is even greater than by our airlines, strange as it may seem.
Elroy Christopher of Campbellton, New Brunswick. Do your cars burn unleaded gas?
Unleaded gas, yes. In Moscow we use unleaded gas, but I know in some areas they do use leaded gas and they color it to make it safer.
What is the price of gas in the USSR? Is it hard to get?
It's not hard to get. The price is $1.14 American dollars a gallon. Well, sometimes on a Friday there will be 5, 6, or 8 cars standing in line, but that's, you know, just before the weekend.
Jacob Carolignan of Montreal, province of Quebec. Why not relay Radio Erevan in Armenia from Moscow? Remember, Armenia is indeed the smallest republic in the USSR, but made the greatest sacrifices during World War II.
Well, Jacob, or should I call you Hakop? I understand that Radio Yerevan is contemplating broadcasting to the American continent. As for making the greatest sacrifices, I cannot agree with you there. Although I myself am 100% Armenian all the way up to my great-grandparents, and my grandfather was burnt alive during this genocide that took place at the beginning of the century. The republic that made the greatest sacrifice, my friend, is Belarusia. They lost every fourth person, every fourth citizen. Mind you, Armenia was not occupied by the Germans, thank God. But of course it made an enormous contribution during the war. It gave the country scores of generals and four marshals, something no small republic did. I can name Marshal Bagramyan, who's still living, Admiral of the Fleet Isakov, Air Marshal Hudyakov, and the late Chief of the Tank Forces of the Soviet Union, Marshal Babajanyan. Despite the fact that, of course, like all the republics, Armenia did its share, and we're proud to say that there are over 100 heroes of the Soviet Union, and one pilot, Nelson Stepanian, was awarded this high title twice.
Michael House of Glendale, Arizona. As I'm an attorney for the city of Phoenix, I'd like to know about procedures for filing lawsuits by citizens against government agencies to redress grievances and resolve damage claims.
In our country, as a rule, civil proceedings are initiated by the statement of a claim that a right of the plaintiff is being violated or has already been violated by another person. Of course, the court will see whether the claim comes under the competence of the court, or maybe it comes under the competence of some administrative body. Some disputes, although eventually settled in court, may be brought into court only after examination by other bodies. This helps settle most of the disputes out of court, and it stimulates mass organizations, like the trade unions, for instance, to protect the workers, the working people's rights, and to eliminate conflicts and violations of labor laws. Labor disputes, for instance, that is, disputes involving wages, discharge of a worker by reason of his being unfit for the job and so on, may be tried in court only after the dispute is examined by a labor disputes board at the enterprise, there's one at every enterprise, or by the factory or office trade union committee. If the worker concerned does not agree with their decision, then he files suit in court, which hears the case in an open sitting. And let me tell you, more often than not, he wins the case.
Krishna Rath, Upper Marlboro, Maryland. Are tourists allowed to move about freely in the USSR?
Well, we have 140 cities and areas open to tourists in the Soviet Union, all the way from the Pacific coast to our western borders. You have a choice of any of these places, 140. Of course, you have to abide by the laws of the country. You cannot go into a classified enterprise or factory, but then neither can I. People come to Moscow, they call us up, they visit us, they walk into stores, movies, cafes, theaters, they talk to people, they're absolutely free to do what they want. I think it's free enough. What else do you want? Of course, I will say this about tourism. It is not more expensive to come to our country than it is to other countries.
Byron O. of Santa Rosa, California. I'd like information on visiting your country.
Byron, I think the best thing to do is to apply at any major travel agency, and they'll give you all the details you want, or people might think I'm turning capitalist and putting on commercials. We do have many types of tours, recreation tours, health tours, business tours. You can come in your own car, or you can rent a car. There are about 7,000 miles of highway open to tourists from abroad. There are camping tours, hunting tours, and what have you.
People believe you can travel alone, but must be with a tour group.
That is not so. As in other countries, we have individual tourism. It's divided into three types: deluxe, first class, and tourist class. And you can obtain bed and breakfast vouchers. You'll be escorted from the airport to the hotel, given breakfast as a minimum, and offered at least one excursion in every city. The rest of the time, you do anything you like.
They also claim your agents are everywhere and watching all the tourists. Is this correct?
You know, we have a legendary figure, Major Pronin, the great detective, and there's a joke about a fellow walking into the bathroom of his hotel, washing himself in the wash basin, and he sees the tired eyes of Major Pronin staring out at him from inside the drain. What you're asking is up the same alley. Don't forget, we have something like 5 million tourists come to the Soviet Union annually. I wonder what size of an army of sleuths you'd need to go following all of them.
And there we end Mailbag for today.